Okay, it's on. Give me a moment. Right. This is Chronicler Morlabent with a brand new clockwork recorder. What a magnificent machine. Before I find myself waxing poetically upon these wax recording cylinders, like I'm sure many a fascinated mind has before me, I'll get right to it. I will be test-riding this new machine by recanting a strange tale brought to me by an even stranger person. The following will be my interpretation of several journal entries of this person, of whose identity I would normally keep in confidence. However, given the nature of this tale, an esoteric adventure much befitting his character, and his now twice arriving on my doorstep on death's door, and in need of a favor, I make no assumptions that his identity need be kept close. In all honesty, and by all accounts, I assume him to be dead. It all starts at a certain lodge outside a certain town on the southern coast of the Isle of Cortos. Our journal maker, heretofore known as Telford Rawline, recalls a recent stay at the lodge, and the frustration of constant interruption in his research by local inhabitants, as well as the arrival of an old friend of the caretakers and staff. He is superfluously vague on their identities, no doubt thanks to his rather apathetic and aloof nature, but I have surmised that the arrival was a local hermit known as Krugger, and the primary aforementioned staff none other than the delightful Arthur of Arastil. Krugger seems to have brought some concerning news of a restless forest along the coast, while Telford also muses in his notes about the self-segregation of the establishment's proprietor on the same night, of whom I easily identified as Aelin Weinmar of Weinmar's Rod and Bow Club. Interruptions led to introductions among Telford, Krugger, and Arthur, but something extraordinary seems to have happened to Aelin. Upon seeking to retire for the night, voices were heard within what should have been the unoccupied hallways of the lodge. Further investigation by Aelin revealed a strange black smoke pouring from one corner, and out from its cloud crawled an otherworldly hound. Surprisingly, it appears its nature eluded even Telford, for all his occult and arcane studies. Aelin calling for aid from the others, the hound made strange use of the space around it, and harried its foes with a gaze that tore bloodless flesh, if it can be believed. But the very capable crew, however uncoordinated and surprised in the moment, managed to put it down. But overcoming this strange intruder was hardly a victory, it seems. For what was left in the wake of the black smoke, I'm sorry. I need a break.
What is up, members of the ranks of the Uncharted motherfucking North? That's right, listeners. That's you, baby. And we are cruising into part two, I guess you could say, of our episode 100, having a little bit of fun. And we are just bringing you something a little different. If you didn't listen to the last episode, I mean, go back.
Can you imagine if somebody just started listening to our podcast in this particular episode? They were just like, episode 101, this is where I like to dive in. I want to know how it ends.
We begin in media res.
Yeah, so if you looked at this and you thought this was season 1, episode 01, you're wrong. You're wrong. This is episode 101.
That's what happened in Encounter This. Sort of.
Anyways, so, you know, we're out here and we're doing something a little different. We're playing some different characters. So I just stole this intro banter idea from Cam, and they were wondering, what is it like playing a different character after 100 episodes or 16 episodes at your regular character, just diving back into something different or something new? So let's talk about it.
I mean, James and Duncan have also had characters die, so it's not 100. You're the only one with 100 episodes here, Scott.
Yeah.
That's true. And also Aelin for all of Troubles in Otari. He who cannot be killed.
Except in that one shot we did.
I want to know, Dunk.
Okay, this is a bit of a weird one because of the parallels between the two characters. So, like, mechanically... pretty fun to play a monk. I mean, I do like the, but it's another martial character. So, and that first fight, not too efficacious so far. But I do kind of like being able to play with a much more kind of like upbeat, magnanimous character that, I don't know. I feel like I pigeonholed myself a little bit with Krukka for being such a weird fucking dude.
But is it harder playing Krukka because you always have to be smarter than you are in real life?
Yeah, those wheels, they have to just turn faster and faster. It gets dizzying sometimes.
How do you afford the grease, Dunk? How do you afford the grease to keep those wheels turning?
Well, if you go to patreon.com/uncharted. Hey.
That a boy.
Yeah, but no, I actually really like it. I mean, I'm excited to be able to get back to our old pals, our local legends that were having troubles in Otari.
Way to plug.
James, how is it playing a different Shuni?
I would play Arthur every day if I could.
Funny thing is, you can do whatever you want when we're playing.
I was not able to in the third chapter of Stemming the Tide because I wanted him to stay alive for reasons that are no longer important now that his nephew's dead.
Oof. Yeah, sidebar, I'm very interested to know how much of this James knew about, or if this dropped in his lap.
I did check with James if he had intentions of replaying Raphael or in particular for this segment. He said no, and I asked him if I could do what I will to tell a great story using him, and he said yes. So I know that.
And you murdered him.
It seems like an abrupt start to that story I'm telling, but I just need you and all the listeners, and especially James, to bear with me.
Listeners, sound off.
listeners, get him at him. Get a Freeman in the Discord. Get at him. Just let him know. Give him the business.
After 100 episodes, could he be more of a son of a bitch?
Well, throw a suck at Byron in the Discord at him.
But so, James, you're having a good time playing Arthur.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Arthur's probably my favorite character that I've ever played. I have so much fun playing him. I love his build. I love his demeanor. I love the story that I've written for him and how piecemeal it is and like incomplete. Just because I love this Healbot build. And then now we're throwing a Beastmaster dedication on top of that. He's just going to be so much fun. Just running around the battlefield. With three, like at this point, Arthur technically has four actions, and they're all going to get used. It's going to be fun.
Okay, interesting question here. I know, and the listeners know, previously you've said that you always like to throw a little bit of yourself into your characters. Is it the sausage rolls, or is it something else? We don't know.
It's the lemon bars.
Or is it the lemon bars?
No.
It is the lemon bars. It's also his love for nature. And Arthur's the kind of person that I always kind of wished I was, you know, this nice, always pleasant, always good to people, kind, sees the best in everything kind of being. He's modeled pretty heavily personality-wise off General Iroh from Avatar: The Last Airbender. And that's the kind of old man I want to be, is just kind and jovial, even though I know it's not possibly attainable for somebody like me. It's just it's nice to be able to express that in like a real genuine fashion, whereas if I just somehow managed to flip a switch on my personality, it would just come off as sarcastic.
Be the Arthur you want to see in the world.
This is kind of the point of these games, right? That escape from reality, that suspension disbelief, and that exercise of doing something beyond yourself. Amen to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because contrary to popular belief, I'm not an actual murderer. Thank you very much.
Not that we know of.
Remains to be seen.
We've never seen you and a heartless murderer in the same room, so
you can't compare. Yeah,
we've never proven actus reus, though I'm pretty sure we've got mens rea down.
Cam.
Yes.
Talk to me, baby. How's Lump different than your buddy Telford?
So Lump is in emotional, vulnerable, like kind of posy core character, just like, you know, stand up, fight the struggle, like just keep pushing forward no matter the odds. And Telford is an apathetic bitch, like just a bastard to his core. And as more and more of the story progresses, you'll see more and more of that. But Telford is almost on the opposite end from Lump. The only thing they share is willing to do almost anything to achieve their goals.
So would you say that Telford and Lump are your two wolves?
Inside me arguing, but both howling at the moon? Absolutely.
Amazing. Absolutely expecting a third act backstab now.
What? Spoilers.
And Freeman, just because I want you to be included and I'm hosting this bitch.
I love being included. I'm a special boy. Just ask my mother.
What is it like jumping into a whole suite of new characters as opposed to the ones that you've been GMing? Because you kind of get to know our characters, our moves, what we're about to do. You look into it. You know things. Buddy, as much fun as we make of you, you know what's going on every once in a while. What's it like now?
I know what's up. I mean, I already kind of know these characters, at least personality-wise. So, and I've talked to, I've either GM'd them or at least most recently talked to everyone about them to varying degrees. Like, I've not really had to talk to James about Arthur at all. I've had to touch in with Duncan about Krugga because it's been quite some time. We went to see what that update is. You know, Telford's the most recent character in this, in the TIO, the Troubles of Notari story arc. And so Cam and I had to sort out some extra deals that we never got to. That's all pretty status quo, I would say, to what the usual mode. The struggle here is that what we're running is something that I have effectively written and connected to the already pre-written adventure. So it was a lot of work to write it, and I am leaning quite heavily at this point on all of you knowing your mechanics, because I have not had the time to really properly review all the details like I normally put aside to do.
Buddy, just call this my local Jiffy Lube, because I know my mechanics.
Hoping Duncan figures it out on the fly. I'm hoping Scott doesn't make it too hard to cut his long pauses. And I think we'll be fine. But that's the biggest difference for me. I've said it before, I made the early decision to keep Troubles of Otari and these characters in the same timeline and universe, and I'm very happy to have made that decision early on, because it opened this opportunity to tell this cool story.
I'm legitimately not sure if you made that decision or if I made that decision for you by bringing in Raphael and just immediately on air mentioning Arthur.
If memory serves, and it is not necessarily reliable, like any more reliable than eyewitness testimony, I do recall at least someone asking me, you know, is there a continuity, and me saying, yes, I'm going to say it's about 2 hours, or sorry, 2 hours, 2 years after the fact. And I'm pretty sure that was before we even started recording SCT. So that probably came up yet again when Samal died and you wanted to ask about Raphael's intro. But I could be wrong. Yeah. That's all behind the scenes and not recorded anywhere. So it's hard to say. I do remember making a decision. Whether or not I was influenced by James directly is up in the air. But regardless, Yeah, it's the heavy workload of story writing for me right now that has been the biggest change for this little series. But otherwise, status quo.
There we go. All right. And as far as I'm concerned, I got way too many feats now. It's hard to remember them all. The character voice is pretty much the exact same. So, hey, at least I got that going for me.
Yeah, you don't have to stress about that.
And he's just kind of angsty in a different way. So, still half elf, yes. Still handsome, you know. It's all good.
Classic. Criminal underbelly kind of angst.
Yeah.
Scott, have you ever played a character that doesn't have +4 charisma?
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because for the listeners, these two characters are very similar that I have been playing, but that's just kind of because the first one was getting ready for the second one in a lot of ways.
It was test recording, right?
Yeah, not ever thinking that it was going to kind of see the light of day. So the previous character I played with these guys was a Skittermander soldier in Starfinder. So yeah. It couldn't have been any different, or could have been more. You know what I'm trying to say. It was a lot different.
Yeah.
So.
He was charming in his own way. I just don't think he had high charisma.
All right. Well, speaking of doing shit differently, let's try to be nice to Freeman as he explains to us why he killed a beloved character off screen. Go.
First of all, Aelin is the one who jets into the hallway to find the body of Raphael. As far as the chat in Foundry is concerned, Arthur went straight to healing people.
Yeah, he didn't know anything was happening there.
Yeah. So I want to know what Aelin does first to handle the situation, as I assume Arthur gets to knitting the wounds.
So as Aelin remembers after this combat immediately pretty much that there was a body in the other room, which he did see a quick glance of, he sprints around the corner, comes through the door, and just kind of slows from that run to a walk and then to a pause and then to a standstill as he looks down upon the lifeless body of Raphael. His voice caught for a moment. Arthur. Arthur. You need to come here and see this.
Yes, I know, Mr. Weinbar. I'm trying to patch up some of these deep wounds on Kraka, but I'll get to you in a second.
Now, my friend, please. It's Raphael.
What's Raphael?
He takes a knee and picks up the small shuni and turns.
No. That... No, Mr. Wine. That... No. It is not possible. No. Raphael. No!
With tears welling up in his eyes, cradling the small body and kind of just rubbing the back of his head, of Raphael's head, he just looks at Arthur. I'm so sorry. I don't know where this came from. I don't know how this happened or why he is here. I'm truly sorry, my friend.
There. There's no use crying over spilled blood.
Aelin immediately looks at Talford. You shut your mouth now.
No, Mr. Wayne. He does not know. My beloved nephew.
I like to think that Aelin kind of like grabs Talford by the collar and pushes him up against the wall, and Talford just has this obviously fake and kind of learned expression of sorrow, like just a person that's trying to pretend to be sorrowful but is not.
I'll go with that.
And Talford looks down at Raphael, his eyes still white and bloodshot. Can I make a medicine check to see how Raphael was killed?
Sure. Yeah.
That is a 32.
It seems like there are a few wounds on his body, obvious of bites and slashes. There are also very obvious bloodless slashed wounds. It looks like that creature you just killed is definitely the culprit. Or, sorry, the creature you just fought and disappeared is definitely the culprit.
It appears that it was the creature that we just faced that was responsible for the deed. Truly, I offer the most I can.
Krekka, seeing the bloodless cuts on his body kind of blend in with the rest of his scars, kind of puts his hand on Arthur's back. Like, well, I guess we've got something to kill.
Why? Why? I just spoke to him not 2 weeks ago. He was on his way to Absalom. He was so young, so full of life. Just received his seal of Pharasma. He was going to help the townsfolk of Otari. It cannot be Raphael.
Do you, so we don't really have a positioning on the map here, but, you know, effectively, Aelin is holding Raphael, at least with one arm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Telford is almost unconscious, like just going to start going through Raphael's pockets in Aelin's arms, just looking for anything.
Aelin does not allow this, and Aelin pulls Raphael in towards his body, kind of cradling him with one arm, and will shove Talford to the side, if you allow that.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah.
Yeah, as you do, you have this sort of altercation, and Arthur is probably just kind of like, in his own way, reaching towards his nephew, but like not ready maybe to touch him. But as this sort of like kerfuffle happens, items start to fall out of the pockets of Raphael's coat and stuff, and because of this sort of like motion, and his religious symbol drops to the ground, his wooden religious symbol to Pharasma. Bits and pieces of his healer's tools, you can feel the jangle of his channel protection amulet kind of like, you know, ring out in the hallway. But in particular is a strange, almost sphere, but with a hole through the center, quite a large hole through the center, drops to the floor with a thud. Dun, 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 dun. It catches your eye.
That definitely catches Arthur's attention. He didn't know it, but he's on his knees now, and his eyes are just, he's having a hard time seeing. But he hears the orb drop, and maybe it's the Shuni in him, but sounds like a ball.
Oh, good bit.
Oh my god, I did not see that coming. I mean, that's a hero point right away. There's no way. You have to have one. Holy shit.
Talford getting shoved against the wall will just light a cigarette, and Aelin would recognize the smell as flayleaf.
Oof. Getting high. Wait, how are you saying that Aelin would recognize that smell?
You did crime stuff. You've obviously been around flayleaf.
Krug has got the herbalist background and asks for a toke.
Talford will give a small nod and hand it over to anybody that wants it.
Well, I was going to say, when Aelin shoves you to the side and you go about this, you were actually standing in front of a door to the main bedroom. And after shoving you, the items fall out of the pockets. He doesn't notice this. He opens the door. And walks into the room and lays Raphael down on the bed.
Once this sort of kind of happens and you set him down, you realize that he's got all the equipment he left with. He's got a crossbow with him, you know, nice small size for him. There's a dagger, a rapier on his hip. He's even got a steel shield kind of wrapped into one arm. You know, you get the feeling he might have died fighting. He's wearing leather armor. And this sort of strange sphere, again, with a hole through it, has popped out. But as you kind of set him down and realize he has all this equipment, there's also a sort of rod kind of attached to his belt. And not holstered like the rapier, but definitely secured to his belt.
Arthur will reach for it.
You look at the rod. Roll me some sort of identify magic check.
25.
This is something you have vaguely heard of or maybe seen before in some of your adventures. You've not been to Absalom many times, but you've heard of recording rods. The sort of thing that is used by the city watch, in particular for investigations. But this one, it looks old. Very old. Anyone else want to maybe roll a check on it? Especially those who have spent some time in Absalom?
Talford, being high, rolls a natural one, gets a 15.
Apathy wins the day.
Aelin would like to roll Lore Absalom. And actually, fucking hot roll. It's going to be a 28.
Amazing. This... You are much more familiar with this sort of device.
I've been trying to get away from crime and people investigating my crime, so he knows all about this type of shit.
Oh, yeah. This is the sort of thing that the City Watch would use to very much record and catch you on crimes and use them in a court of law. However, this one looks very ancient compared to the ones you are familiar with. This sort of recording rod has some significant differences from the current generation, but it's no less effective. While they could record for longer periods of time, recordings were placed in recording cores for this type of rod, which in turn could be slotted into the recording rods for activation. So recording rods normally only record like up to a minute. This thing, the old versions, required cores to record onto and were like a one-time permanent use because the current ones can re-record over themselves. This one cannot. Basically record up to like 10 minutes worth, this one in front of you, instead of one. The difference here as well, too, is that the current recording rods will transmit information telepathically. This one does not. Instead, it broadcasts a sort of hologram-like image of the vicinity that was recorded with sight and sound.
So, remembering all this, Aelin turns to Arthur and just says, "We may find some answers on here. This is a recording rod. An ancient one. It may explain what he was up to."
Is there a play button?
There is no core installed. It's just a rod.
Talford is going to go ahead and cast Detect Magic.
Okay, yeah, you detect magic on the Channel Protection Amulet, on Raphael, plus one rapier, definitely the recording rod, and definitely the ball with a hole through the center.
Talford will hold out a hand for the ball from Arthur.
If you don't mind, I think that I can turn this on so we can see what's on it.
And Aelin, as he sees Talford approach Arthur, shoots him
an intimidating glare.
A fucking, yeah. He's like roll, one roll step shy of an intimidating strike right now.
Go ahead and fucking roll the intimidate. See if you can intimidate.
Yeah, do it. Let's see what happens.
4 on the die for a 16. I wish I never agreed to that.
Well, if you didn't, Talford wasn't even going to pay attention. I was trying to give you a chance here. Talford brushes off the glare as if it's beneath his notice.
Son of a bitch.
And holds his hand out, palm up. Please, if you don't mind, I think we can at least see what killed this creature.
Does the orb look like the rod would fit inside of it?
It looks like a perfect match.
Ignoring Talford's requests, Arthur will head over to Aelin and hold out a paw for the rod.
Fetch.
Duncan, you son of a bitch. Aelin passes him the rod.
And Arthur will connect the pieces.
So you slide this orb onto the rod. It slides down to the bottom where there's like a small little kind of not quite hilt where it stops. And as you do, you can't believe you didn't notice it. But a little piece of crumpled paper that was kind of in the middle of the hole of this orb flies out as you do so, pushed out by the rod. It lands on the floor.
Aelin picks it up.
You pick it up and kind of try to do your best to smooth that out a little bit, and you can see there's a single page hastily torn from a book. The writing has this sort of inconsistent and difficult to make out kind of pattern in some places, as if someone was struggling to pen the words. And it says this. Appears to have been written by Raphael. Whoever would like to read it is welcome to.
I mean, Aelin has it, so.
Okay. I just wasn't sure if James wanted to voice it. Let's hear it. Let's hear it in Raphael's voice. So Aelin says this.
Which is Arthur's voice.
But let's hear it in Raphael's voice.
I love it, and I love it.
This will be the last of my entries. What I have discovered, I cannot write down in detail. It would never be allowed to leave in written form. And while I've committed it to memory, I wish I had never learned it to begin with. But it is too important and far closer to home than I ever expected. This is the last, because I now need to focus on getting out. Whatever it is that happened to me in gaining these final pieces, I am now stuck by the angles in the shadows. Targeted for my incidental tampering. No one should be marked like this. However, my fear goes beyond myself. Beyond my uncle. My friends. Or those heroes within the vaults. I never thought it would include the Hall of Absalom, but it goes beyond even that. I must get out. This must be stopped. The gauntlet. It can never be activated again. Whoever reads this, find the detective's trail. It shall guide you.
And as Aelin finishes reading this, he looks up and makes eye contact with Arthur, moves to him, takes a knee, and puts a hand upon his small shoulder. I'm sorry, my friend. We must now take this and find out what's happened here. For Raphael.
I would not presume so much of you, Mr. Weinmar. It was my nephew. And I owe this to my brother, Bartholomew. This quest is mine.
And if you wish to accompany me, it would be a treasure to have a friend such as you along the way. But I do not presume to think that you would join.
Old friend, of course I will do this. I must.
Well, I think for now we heal up these wounds, rest, figure out what he could have meant by the detective. Maybe we start in Absalom. But after you are healed, tonight I spend with my nephew before we head to Absalom. I will need to send word via Eloria to his family, to our family.
And Aelin nods, standing, gives Talford a dirty ass look, and moves out of the room.
Talford just looks confused for a brief moment at why people are so upset at him before shrugging and taking a drag off the flay leaf and walking out to go read his books.
So I did the healing off screen. You guys should all be close enough, I think, that a long rest will get you to max. If you're not, let me know. It takes Arf for about an hour to get everybody there between continual recovery and ward medic, so he's able to just blitz through this.
Does Arfur heal Talford?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Arfur's not mad at Talford.
Aelin is.
He's kind of confused by his reaction. And he understands that Talford doesn't know. He doesn't really know Arfur. He doesn't know his family. Like, this is his first
benefit
experience.
Benefit of the doubt, so
he,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then he will lock himself. Well, I mean, instead of sleeping in his tiny room, he'll stay with Raphael in the, I guess, the guest suite.
Is yeah,
the master guest suite.
Yeah, it was the nicest room in the place.
Yeah. This is our first tiny room up here in the corner.
Can we all just appreciate the new game pause button or symbol?
Yep.
I didn't want to mention it because it's not an audio joke at all.
It's okay. We'll take a screenshot.
For the listeners, it says game paused, like a paw.
P-A-W-S-E-D, and it's just our first token going in circles. It's great.
Glad you didn't say Raphael.
Right? Had to retake it again.
He lives us with us always as Freeman fucking up the line every time.
What's the word, listeners? What's the word? But
just call him Arfail.
Then all cases are buffered. Arfail, yeah.
After getting patched up, Talford will give a small nod to Arfur. I appreciate your patching. I see you're also skilled with the needle, as it were.
I have spent many a nights healing the wounds of the others. Violence is an unfortunate side effect of the world we live in. Some think it is in our nature. We are the smartest, we are the strongest, we are the bravest. So we must fight to prove these things to each other. This is not true. Those of us who are the smartest, strongest, and the bravest, we help the others, not hurt. So as soon as I was able, and chosen by Arasto, blessed with his powers, I try not to take any lives if I can help. First heal, then, and only then, if all else fails, we take.
Talford turns his head quizzically, pondering in his head why you would heal first before harming, almost as if it seems like an illogical paradox, before looking down at the small Shuni with a practiced artificial smile.
Sometimes I agree with you. Other times, there needs to be a form of violence. It should never be wanton or reckless. But with the precision of a surgeon, sometimes we must hurt others to heal things.
Unfortunately, what you say is true. There is evil in this world. This I cannot and will not deny. But that will never be my first choice.
Talford considers the Shuni again before just giving a small nod.
I can see your side. I just don't know that I agree with it.
And then just promptly, without saying anything else, walks away.
Arthur just staring after him, bandage in hand.
I would never ask you to.
And while they're speaking, Krega follows Aelin into the front room, stands next to him. I seem to have a knack for showing up at an inopportune time.
Aelin's eyes were cast down heading into the room, but they look up at Krega with some light. This may be true, my friend, but why are you here? We were lucky to have you. If that creature had showed up without you, things could have been far worse.
I came home after a long journey. I've been reconnecting with my past. I've been having visions of, I don't know, possible family? I don't know what I have in this area, but I there's something amiss that needs to be corrected first. I could feel it. I could feel it in the woods coming back. And I don't know what you read on that book. Hate the things, never trusted them. But I trust you, Aelin, so I'll help you with whatever we need to get done here.
Thank you, my friend. I'm glad you are back. It is good to see your face. It's been many years now, I feel.
Yes, I'm glad to see that the spiders have left and have not come back.
It's true. We have come a long way. Have you heard of what's happened in town? In the graveyard?
No. I've just walked back through the door.
Something strange is going on here. In Otari, the dead were raised from some sort of light from the gauntlet. It was bad. Many, many people were killed in town. They're rebuilding now. I hope that Jack and Miroslav are okay. They haven't come back yet, so I just hope they've got into their cups.
They sound like dicks. I'm just joking. I guess things must be worse than I thought. We've come a long way from clearing out spiders and animals from your rod and bow club. But if this is another job that needs to be done, it's another job that needs to be done.
It seems our work is never over.
And he will light up a joint.
Dirty hippie.
Yeah,
monk.
Fuck those.
Okay, he will light a bong.
Talford, I figure, is done about the same time they're done with their conversation. And we'll go back out. And where Krugga was sliding over the table, knocking away all of his scripts and books, he'll just let out a sigh.
Krugga quietly delighted at both the books being in disarray and him not being happy with it.
We'll quietly pick everything up before the words the Shuni said, like, don't hit Talford, but Talford remembers, like, the rod. Oh, god damn it. How did... And we'll just, like, rush back and start, like, for a moment, like, go to, like, bang on the door that Arthur's in and just like pause for a second and remember a little bit more social decorum and politely just knock.
Ah, I see you haven't forgot everything on the Barbazoo's lettuce.
What?
The devil's lettuce. That was a good joke, Scott. That was a really good joke.
For the listeners, Scott has his hand, face firmly in his palm right now.
Yeah. Scott got himself.
No, it's so bad.
Scott got himself.
It's so bad.
I really liked it.
It went right over my head. I'm not going to lie.
It was a stretch.
No, it wasn't. I'm down. Yeah. I appreciate your Pathfinder 80s slang. Are you guys actually smoking Flaylee? Is that what's really happening?
Oh, Talford is absolutely.
Yep.
Okay. Cool.
Aelin is not. Not that he's against it, but...
Are you guys just at stage one then?
Yeah.
Okay. Flaylee, not great. Not great at all. It's real bad for you.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, the mechanical effects are pretty ruthless. Stage two,
they can be
three.
Bad. Yeah,
the fortitude save is just so low that at this level, like, I can't fail.
Okay, Kruga is a poser and smoking clove cigarettes.
GM discretion, level of tolerance, as it were.
It's a DC 12 fortitude save. I have a 10, so like I literally have to roll a 1 or a 2 to fail. So like, yeah, but Talford will compose himself and politely knock on Arthur's door.
Just very slowly opens from one side. And you can see the weariness on his face now. He's been trying to hold it back for everybody else, but he looks tired now.
I am... Do you have the rod? And the... We should activate it, and you see Talford kind of stumbling over his words, like he doesn't understand why people are upset, but he sees the weariness on the Shuni's face, who was kind to him, and is trying to do something approaching the right thing.
Yeah, I think Arthur recognizes this and just, still looking rather defeated, just hands you the rod and recording CD-ROM or whatever it is.
The VHS, listeners.
The VHS.
Spherical floppy disk?
Yeah, I think the inaccurate facsimile is CD-ROM because they're not rewritable.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. That's true.
It does video, though. It must be HD DVD.
CD-ROM does video?
Yeah.
Sorry. What is it? How old are you guys?
I was just trying to make a defunct joke.
Laser disc.
It's a wax cylinder.
Arthur hands it to you and just, thank you, Mr. Roland. Let me know in the morning, I think, if there is anything that you're able to come up with. And he hands Talford the rod and cylinder and closes the door behind him. Goes back and curls up on the bed with Raphael.
Well, that's sad as fuck.
Fucking better be.
Yeah.
Sure is. Oh, man.
I mean, Cam is sad. Talford's not, but Cam is sad.
Yeah.
And Talford will look at the items in his hand before heading back out to what, as far as he's concerned, his table, and prop the magical rod, the base on the table, before gently sliding the sphere onto it and trying to figure out how to activate it.
Just out of curiosity, who else is there to witness?
All of us.
All but Arthur.
Yeah.
And Goku.
And Goku.
Part of this team, damn it.
Goku has sightline from there.
Until we get to mounted combat, I'm going to forget.
Wait, we can joust with Goku?
Yeah. Yeah, Goku gets a free action every turn, so I just have my three actions and then one for him to either move or strike.
To be fair, Arthur will not be jousting. Not the build Arthur's got, but yes, at the same time. You sit down and sort of cast your eyes and hands over this rod. The sphere with the hole through the center slides down the shaft perfectly, hits that little sort of stopping point that's almost a hilt. And then you kind of find a small little button to activate. It's quite straightforward. And as this ancient recording rod sputters to life, its magics wane and the mechanical parts kind of whir as it's badly damaged from years of neglect. In fact, you couldn't really tell from the visual that it has inside mechanical parts, but you could hear them coming to life. And then suddenly a blurry and stuttering scene spills across the area all around you, and I mean filling the room and getting cut off in weird ways and kind of stopping against the wall that prevents you from seeing it properly. And if you will allow me, Cam, immediately Talford gets up and moves to make sure that there's enough room to see the visual properly, getting into the right space of the common room to not miss what might be recorded on here.
Talford would just absolutely just rush out the front door into the night.
Yeah.
Onto
you
the
get
beach.
Right out on the beach. Yeah. And it just, boom, big ol' expanse.
Aelin follows.
Son of a bitch.
As does Gregor.
The scene spills across the beach, and you can see there are two humanoid creatures in a large room. And again, it's sputtering, it's not clear, it's sort of this weird flickering image. But in the center of said large room appears to be a circular pit. Within the pit appears to be hundreds, if not thousands, of shelves filled with books. And the books float in and out of the pit at what appears to be a request placed with a nearby librarian, who then casts some sort of magic to draw one out. The furniture and shelves and books and librarian, everything flicker in and out of existence as the unstable magic stutters. One of the figures has these sort of lizard-like features and is sitting down sifting through the pages of a thick volume. The other seems to be slowly meandering around the room, seeming to not pay much attention to any one thing. And the only discernible feature in the latter of the two are these glowing red eyes and this glowing fiery red hair. And then you hear them speak, starting with the latter with the glowing eyes.
What are we doing here again?
We're looking for anything that connects the Hierophexes to these deaths.
Let me rephrase. What am I doing here?
You know management likes partners in these things. I think two minds make for a broader perspective.
Do they now?
I'm inclined to agree. You aren't one of those lone wolf complex types, are you?
No. It's just... I've just come in from the coins, as new to Star Watch as they come. Is it standard practice to throw the new guy into the middle of a big conspiracy investigation? I mean, it wasn't routing out conspiracies that exactly got me a promotion from the Token Guard. More like routing out corruption.
Standard? Maybe not. The Star Watch keeps a low number these days, which means when we lose one, we lose a lot. So when we gain one, it better be a lot as well. And if you think the Hierophexes don't have anything to do with corruption, then maybe they did promote the wrong guy.
And I suppose you probably think I got some big-ass boots to fill, No pressure and all that.
All right, yeah. I'd rather Smokey was here instead of you, but he's dead. We've got a job to do. Is that what you want to hear? We can dangle regret and loss, or hash out why you're too scared you won't be good enough for the eyes of the big bad Star Watch upper management, or you can help me sift through this shit.
Yeah, all right. Sorry. What are we looking for, then?
If I knew that, I'd have maybe found it by now.
Okay, let me rephrase. What sort of thing do you hope to find in the genealogy section?
Like I said, something that connects the Haraveses. What better than a family tree?
Bit on the nose, don't you think?
Think so? How about this? And the image flickers to show the seated man to be a bulky lizard folk as he lifts the hefty book from his face to his new partner. He dabs a finger at a single standout word. The partner leans in, the image flickers again, showing his skin is cragged and glowing red lines. That partner is definitely human, perhaps, but for sure, Ifriti blood. And he cocks an eyebrow.
I thought they were a myth.
And then suddenly the image flickers harshly and brutally, and everything becomes too blurred. You lean in to try and see what they're pointing out in the book. You can't quite see it. And it shuts down. And you're left with nothing but the moonlit sky and the sound of the lapping waves around you.
And Krogus spits in the sand.
God damn it. Talford will actually shoot Krug a fucking stare.
Krug shoots it right back.
And then they kiss.
Very nice.
Roll closing credits.
Ooh, oh my.
And that was episode 100, folks.
Hey, we did
see you back in the Abomination Vault.
No.
If you want the continuation, unchartednorth.com/only.
Goku, no.
No. Oh, no. That was too far. That was too far. I quit the podcast.
Oh, that's rich.
Duncan is looking so bashful right now. He's like, why did I just say that?
Someone cut that. No, just kidding. Play it twice.
Play it again, Sam.
So it appears we have two detectives, and the note you read, and Talford will throw like a small glance to Aelin, said to follow the detectives. So we need to track them down. They said they were part of the Star... I'm sorry, Freeman. Can you give me what the...
Star Watch. You would know it. Star Watch, and so would Aelin, yeah. Star Watch is the... like the next level of police and security in Absalom. They govern the city watch effectively and are sort of where you would get your detectives from, yeah, not just your local guard.
They're the CIA of Cortos.
Oh, so they're evil.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Debatable.
They ain't necessarily good.
Yeah.
So Aelin turns and says, I've had some run-ins with them. Not to be underestimated. But yes. We need to follow them.
You actually see the closest approximation of respect pass over Talford's face for a moment as you say, I've had run-ins with them. It's very, very brief. It's just, And then Talford will turn and look at Krugga.
I understand you don't like books. But I do think that you like the people in this town and the people in this Rod and Boat Club. Am I correct in this assessment?
You are.
Well, then, I won't ask you to read, but I will ask you to come along.
I'll come with you. I have my reasons. Not noticing that on his back is a swab, which is all Star Watcher bastards.
Yeah.
Very well. Can one of you explain to me why the Shuni is so upset at the other Shuni being dead?
It is his nephew, Telford. Family ties run deep, especially in Shunis. You must understand that just because you lack the emotional competence to understand why one would be sad that their loved one has passed away, doesn't mean that it doesn't hurt for the rest of us. And you should watch yourself and the way you act around them. And Aelin turns and walks into the building.
And Telford just gives you the crocodile smile.
I think that went well, don't you, Krucka?
We're all feeling a lot of feelings right now, except for maybe you.
And Telford just turns his head quizzically.
Yes, I suppose you all are.
And we'll go back inside before, like, shooting a look behind over his shoulder.
Do you think Aelin would sign the book?
And he holds up a copy of Behind the Veil, A Walk Through the Puddles.
You'd have to ask him. I honestly hate books.
I see. What? Did a book hurt you at some point? Did it, like, fall and hit you in the head?
How do you think that got these scars? Paper cuts.
No, it's all making way more sense now. I do understand. If a book did that to me, I might not look like books either, so...
Glad we have come to an understanding.
Like Krugga came to a bunch of cash once, and then he, like, put all the cash in the bed and rolled in it and just cut them all up.
You make it rain once, and it pours for the rest of your life.
Ah, the old expression, someone in the future must be pissing on my grave.
Yep, and it will get more literal as time goes on, I'm sure.
Undoubtedly. And Telford will take the sphere off the rod and put it into some pouches and go to bed.
And everyone follows suit in their own time. Eventually, day comes, the morning comes. Aelin, you awake and immediately think, Jack and Miroslav must have had quite a time, because they still have not showed up.
At least they're drinking on someone else's dollar for once. No, he doesn't think that. He is concerned because they're his employees, but his friends, and strange things are abrew right now. Especially with that attack. Raphael just died, and Krugga's back. It all just seems very convenient and also not good. It's almost like there's an adventure brewing.
Not to mention he just received a brain in a jar yesterday.
Right, right.
Yeah, right?
I did forget about that.
Has the hook got you? Has the hook got you?
Yeah. So I think that Aelin actually fell asleep at his desk. Because after the run-in, I guess you would say, with Telford and all this happening, he went back to his office, sat down, poured himself a dram of something, and just kind of started considering everything and fell asleep to that. And he wakes up and is kind of taken aback for a second as he looks and sees the brain floating in the jar.
And the eyes.
And the eyes, too.
Brain and eyes, yeah.
Krugga will walk in from having just gotten through. Well, he went to his cabin overnight and got up bright and early. Walks in the door. What the fuck is that? Oh my god, the eyes kind of follow you.
You know what? For Aelin too, it's like you would think you know Chalkface's eyes, but you never consider the fact that eyes would be so difficult to discern when they are out of someone's head. It's like you feel like they gotta be them, but then you're kind of like, damn, I didn't ever think I'd have to try and discern it this way.
They're way bigger than you think.
You just, yeah, right? You just can't be sure. And it's like, yeah, it sets your nerves on edge for sure.
Yeah, and I think also the other thing is that Aelin ran into Chalkface a couple times. But like when you're the head of a gang, you don't often see the head of the other gang because you're almost always kind of protected. So he's trying to, I think he's just sitting there trying to reach back into his memory and think about if it is or not, but he just can't really figure it out. Looking at them and looking at Krugga and just like trying to be like, are they the size of orc eyes? Are they similar?
That's hilarious. Yeah, because Chalkface was an orc, by the way, for everyone listening. Yeah.
Telford will stroll out of his room, light a cigarette, and make his way to Arthur's room and knock on the door quickly, but not too loudly.
The groggy Shuni opens the door. And I don't know how long Talford's been here at this point, but this is easily the only time Talford's been awake before Ruff. Like, he's normally out and back with the day's catch before dawn even breaks.
Mm-hmm.
So this is he looks very crumpled, like slept in his hat. The covers are still up on the bed, like that kind of stuff.
I think to add into it, like, Talford honestly probably woke up and went to go check outside for Arthur first, like to see him fishing, and then like looks around and doesn't see him and is like, oh, that's unusual, and walks in, and that's when he knocks. Because, yeah, I think that Arthur...
Yeah, Talford's been here once and left and come back again at least once in that order. Maybe multiple times, but definitely minimum that amount.
And so we'll quietly but kind of insistently knock at the door.
Yeah, he opens the door, looks all crumpled, and like just starts adjusting his hat while licking his lips, trying to get the night out of his mouth. Looks up at you.
And Talford will gaze down at him. We managed to get the recording rod to work last night. Are you familiar with Absalom at all?
I know it a little from my younger days. It has been a long while since I've been back to the big city.
I see. And are you familiar with the Star Watch then?
Yes. I know of the Star Watch. Not much, just the rumors of Acelia of Gear and Hurricane Wings, whispers, you know, the things everyone knows.
Of course. Well, we're looking for an Uruk-hai and an Ifrit. From what I gathered, your nephew was involved in something that is what led us to coming into possession of this, and we'll hold out the rod and sphere for Arthur if he wants to take it. But I do believe that if you seek vengeance, if you seek answers, or if you seek peace, our best bet is to head to Absalom and track down these detectives.
He looks over his shoulder, turns back to Talford, and takes the rod and disc. And...
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Orline, for this lead. Mr. Weinmar and myself shall set off very shortly. I don't know who's preparing breakfast. I don't think Miroslav came back last night, but... We'll figure that out on the road, I suppose. I guess our first stop must be Otari.
What do you need to do there?
He glances over his shoulder again. We need to preserve Raphael the way he is. Send word
and the body out with Aloria to his father and mother up island. Gather supplies, I suppose, and then we make for Absalom via the granary road, I suppose.
I realize I might not have made the...
He takes a drag off his cigarette. The best impression is smoke is escaping out of his lips as he talks. But I would like to come along, if I may.
Arthur looks at him very hard.
Mr. Rollin, your support would be invaluable and incredibly generous. But you will forgive me for inquiring. What would be your motive?
In the recording, I saw a great many books, and I cannot say or profess that I had any love for your nephew, as I never met him. But I understand there are times to work on your own and times to work together. And I believe that our venture would be mutually beneficial to each other.
It would be an honor to have you by our side.
Talford kind of gets stunlocked for a second at the kind words.
By the word honor?
Yeah. And just like yeah. The kindness, like after just saying like, why are you crying over spilled blood yesterday? And then like just recomposes. Very well. I am sure that there will be difficulties with Aelin to come, but I will do my best to not be so insensitive.
I would never ask you to be something you are not, insensitive or no. But I would ask you, if you come along, your first response to any conflict is not violence. Second, third response, acceptable. First, I'd appreciate the opportunity to speak.
Is preparing for violence enough of a pause?
I suppose we shall see together, shall we not?
We shall. And Talford offers up the artificial plastic smile again.
Offers down. I think you've been 3 feet lower than me. I didn't mean...
Just sees chin.
Oh, such chin. A petted...
You can't tell, but I'm smiling up here.
Sorry, I've been holding on to this for a second. I like to think that the only thing that Arthur knows about the Star Watch is that the thing they have in common is they both love pastries.
Oh, so in my head, in my mind, everything guys. Arthur knows about the Star Watch, he learned reading Aelin's book.
Oh, okay.
I like cool.
That's why I went for the big shots with the hurricane wings and Acilia of gear. Like those are the big ones. So I figured Aelin would know that stuff. So Arthur has definitely read Aelin's book. 100%.
Oh, by the way, do you think Aelin would sign my copy of his book?
I mean, you know he didn't write it, yes?
Arthur looks completely dumbstruck. And then, like, you see the gears Arthur turning.
Oh, so, Arthur looks completely...
Freeman, you got me fucking up.
Contagious.
Holy shit. Holy shit. It's your own character. What the hell? God.
I get it. We all love Arthur, but he's mine.
We all love Arthur. Oh my God.
Talford looks dumbstruck for a moment before. Yes, I suppose it is a little too eloquent and a little too well written to be something produced by Aelin.
I mean, I'm sure he would sign it for you, but Mr. Ethercap did the actual penning of the stories. Though they are Mr. Weinmar stories, and I suppose that he deserves credit for living them.
Do you think anyone else would know? Because as a collectible, if they don't know that it was ghostwritten, him signing it makes it worth more.
I don't... Was the book written under Aelin's name or Vale's name?
Vale.
I mean, he would sign it, but I don't think he will use his current identity. I don't imagine he would want to give up all of this as Mr. Weinmar, but perhaps he would pen it as his birth name, Mr. Vale.
Talford nods before,
well, you want to go find breakfast?
He looks over his shoulder to the corpse of his nephew on the bed.
I'll bring you breakfast.
Thank you.
Krukka bursts in. Who wants breakfast in bed?
At ultimate odds.
Yeah. Couldn't be farther from each other.
I, as a player, would really appreciate just hand waving our stuff in Otari. I don't have the emotional fortitude to go back to that place to explain to Vandy and Aloria what happened to Raphael.
Mm.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think that's totally fine, yeah.
Yeah. I sorry for depriving the listeners of that, but
no.
That it was a lot to go there the first time.
I made some notes here to help facilitate, but we can also help to gloss over in a way, which is not necessarily a bad thing. So you're gonna kind of get your day started, I'm sure quite slowly. You head yourselves back into town. You have to bring Raphael's body along with you. You get into town and you can tell something is up. You're going along the South Coast Road, as it's called, and there are no guards along it like normal. Once you get into town, you can tell that there's this sort of hustle and bustle. Something has happened, and it doesn't take you long for you to gather the information from the locals as to what has been about. There has been an attack. Jarl Mesmin, of all people, has returned and has been defeated, and at the hands of the heroes of the Gauntlet. Like, what are the chances? They're supposed to be down there fighting what is threatening the town, and manage to be on the surface to face off yet again another threat to the town. As you sort of root around and see if you can help, you bring Raphael to Vandy, who is already attending many people, including more dead town guard. And no words need be spoken, really. She is confused, surely. And there is little explanation you can offer, because it makes no sense that Raphael is there and lifeless. But she does her best to take care of him. You also notice along this little journey, bringing him there, that there's another body. And it's that of Magiloy. And as you strike up a conversation with Vandy, you realize that Jakira Marislav are also under her care. And as it turns out, they were happily trying to earn some income by trying one of Magiloy's concoctions. And it turned out to be much worse than usual, because it was actually spiked with a tincture of wolf's bane. I mean, think like tonka bean, which is a delicious, wonderful thing in our world, but regulated for its poisonous effects in great volume, especially in the U.S., I think, as far as I know. And she was trying something new, and they weren't at risk of dying, but, you know, they became very ill, and she shut her business early. And she suspected that the full moon had affected the wolfsbane in some way. And according to Miroslav and Jakira's accounts, they, Magiloy had gone out after shutting down to find more Wolfsbane to retest her theory of the full moon affecting it. And it ended up getting her caught by something very unsuspected, which was the werewolf of Jahl. Amongst all these things you hear from the town guard, whether it's from one of the senior guards or it's Gerald or Long Saddle, that they no longer have the resources to cover the road to the Rod and Bow Club. They need to double down again. It's been 2 years of safety, but they can't afford it again. Things are too tight here. And as you're passing through the town, you come across lots of cleanup efforts. Fishers and laborers and couriers alike are all doing their best to clean up bodies in the streets. Blood in the streets. The blacksmith especially needs a lot of cleaning. And you can see that the graveyard's cleanup is not prioritized. The removal of corpses and guards and whatnot are there, but tombstone and crypt repairs not underway. But the bridge that prevented the heroes of Otari from saving one town guard, that bridge is very much being repaired with haste now. And as you kind of gather all this in and you make your way to the edge of town again, you pass by Odd Stories. And you can see Morlabent is got a whole bunch of books on clotheslines outside and inside and is busy at work trying to fix a lot of the water damage done to the books at the Dawnflower Library. You pass by and take all this in. And not a very large amount of time, but it's a lot to take in.
If I may interject, it probably takes us until dusk to get out of Otari again. Seeing in the state that it's in, Arthur would want to help. You know, they walk by people cleaning up bricks from a broken house. He helps stack a couple of bricks. He helps sweep out a shop. He patches wounds. Like, every time they pass somebody new, he does something small that he can to help on the way in and on the way out again.
Telford sees this and not understanding it on an emotional level, but having just enough like social intelligence to understand the gesture, will go help Morlabent with the books, because that's something that Telford actually does care about.
Yeah, Krego would help them with that, but thinking that he's hanging the books to their doom and not actually... No, he'd actually...
he'd help, damn it, Dunk!
He angles into to the sunlight for fame.
He'd help Arthur out, I think, and follow him around.
Okay, yeah.
Aelin is going to head to the Crook's Nook. Because he wants to find out any information that he can on, first of all, what's been going on there, and just look into this letter and see if there's any news from Absalom as far as Chalkface is concerned, as far as Din is concerned, the Pawn Kickers, the Half Brothers, like any information, because he has underground network as a feat.
Yeah. Right. And I sort of consider this in advance in a way. I knew you had that, and so you go back to the Crook's Nook and you find your way towards Yen Yasbra, and she just says, like,
Aelin Weinmar, you came to me already. I did my part. That letter in your hand, it is what I found. If you want more, you'd have to go to the source, because that is all I can give you.
And he nods, says, we're on our way, and I will find more. Thank you for all you've done. Turns.
Everyone gets 2 hero points, and the crew from the Rod and Bow Club set out along the Rose Guard Road. to Absalom. No, you don't like that. Shut up.
And level up.
A jaunty tune in their hearts and a suck it burn on their lips.
Hey, hey, Telfer.
Yes.
What do you call an alligator in a vest?
An investigator?
An investigator.
An investigator.
Son of a bitch.
I God. Fucking love the fucking Talford Arthur team up. Like, holy shit, that is just no. premium fucking inject that shit into my veins. Yes, please.
Oh, shit. Right. Thanks, listeners. That's what we're going to call it. Stemming the Tide is an actual play podcast of the Adventure Path Abomination Vaults and is produced by the Uncharted North Network. Stemming the Tide uses trademarks and or copyrights owned by Paizo Inc., used under Paizo's community use policy. We are expressly prohibited from charging you to use or access this content. Stemming the Tide is not published, endorsed, or specifically approved by Paizo. For more information about Paizo Inc. and Paizo products, visit paizo.com. Music is composed by Will Savino and artwork by Greyhood. Stemming the Tide is recorded remotely using Foundry Virtual Tabletop. If you wish to connect with us or support this project and projects to come, we can be found at unchartednorth.ca, patreon.com/unchartednorth, and on all major social media platforms. Links to all credits can be found in the episode description and our website. Thanks for tuning in.